Well, Coast to Coast guest Nurse Joyce Riley recommended our next guest, filmmaker and documentary producer Massimo Mazzucco, and we will be talking about conspiracies in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Massimo Mazzucco is an Italian filmmaker known for producing incredible documentary films such as The New American Century and Cancer, The Forbidden Causes. We'll talk about all this. He's also the editor of, and I'm going to have him pronounce it, an Italian news site known especially for discussing conspiracy theories regarding the 9/11 attacks. And here he is back on Coast to Coast, first time, recommended by Joyce Riley just a few weeks ago. Massimo, how are you?
Good evening to you, and good evening to everybody listening.
I let you announce your news agency site. How do you pronounce that?
Oh, it's unfortunately, when I picked it, I never knew I was going to be on American radio. So I picked a very long and convoluted Italian name. It's luogocomune.net.
There's no way I was going to hit that cold.
No, you could not. But anyway, you did pronounce my name correctly, and that's already
not bad.
A good point.
One of my favorite restaurants in St. Louis, where I spent a lot of time, is a little restaurant called the Cafe Napoli, which is from a dear friend of mine who was from Napoli in Italy, and just great people. I am telling you, so friendly, so honorable. It's something. You were born, whereabouts in Italy were you born?
So I'm from the north. I'm from Milano.
Okay.
And I lived in Milano until I was about 35 or 40. I used to be a fashion photographer before. Then I switched to making films. And I came to Hollywood, and when I was about 40, which is 15 years ago, I came a week after the earthquake in 1994. So I got a great welcome here in Los Angeles. All the trees were down, the roads were broken. I said, this must be a good sign.
And I have a feeling there may be another one on the horizon somewhere.
Oh, I've been hearing that for so long now that when it happens, it's probably going to take everybody by surprise at this point, you know?
Hey, Italy's having some financial problems these days.
Oh, financial, huh? Yes. I think we are the next down the road after Greece, after Spain and Portugal.
This planet is topsy-turvy. And when you talk, and we'll get into this tonight, you're with us 3 hours. When we talk about conspiracy theories, when you look at what's going on around this planet and these countries that are falling by the wayside, both in upheavals internally or financial upheavals, it's almost as if someone has got a playbook, Massimo, to try to control all these countries all of a sudden. It's a funny feeling. Do you feel that?
Well, then you are a conspiracy theorist.
See? I sure am.
This makes you one of them. You know, when you start looking into things and you start analyzing rationally and your brain works in an average good way, there's only a certain set of conclusions you can reach. And unfortunately, this is one of them. You know, it's very, very hard not to see things like that when you start looking at things in a larger picture. Yeah.
Let's get into some of the things that have been going on worldwide, and then we'll get into some specifics of your work. Each one of your DVD documentaries is a program really all by itself, but we'll try to cover all of it tonight. To me, and you have pointed this out in your work too, one of the biggest things that I think is fueling information these days, the Internet.
Absolutely.
And give me your thoughts on that.
I mean, absolutely.
On a world perspective.
Absolutely. I remember when I opened my website in Italy in 2004. I did because there was no information whatsoever in Italy. And I live in the States, okay, but I am Italian, and of course I am much more familiar with my language. And so I realized that in Italy there was absolutely nothing on 9/11, and I started doing little articles, and suddenly I drew so much attention. And there was this thirst for a different kind of information. And this has been exploding, of course, in the last years. So we've all witnessed that. It's absolutely important. I mean, I believe that Internet is like the third revolution in the history of communication.
Mm-hmm.
First one was the invention of the press by Gutenberg. The second was radio and television. And this is the third one. But this is the first one in which information cannot be controlled. In radio, television, and earlier in books, you could control what you put out and what you don't. In this case, it goes both ways. It travels in all directions. And this is really the great revolution. My voice is as good as yours, as good as anyone else's. And you can't really lie anymore with the Internet because you can check facts now. You know, once you would see a program on television and they would say, for example, oh, all the conspiracy theories, just to pick one example, all the conspiracy theories of 9/11 have been debunked. and you would simply basically believe it and go to sleep.
That's right.
Now you go on the internet, you check it and go, it's not true. And you can actually find out your own, get your own source of information.
You can get articles, you download things, you can find quotations from people that you might not have believed before. It's all over the place.
Every day to me is a new discovery. And believe me, I've been on the internet for 7 years, 24/7 now. And, you know, I almost lost my family life because I really wanted to do this so badly. And I got into this so badly, into this research, which has brought me to put together all these different films on different issues, actually. And really, every day to me is a new surprise. And at this point, I don't have a certainty anymore on anything. I just go open. Anybody brings up a new idea, a new possibility, even though initially I would say, oh, no, come on, really? I really save myself a little room for surprise because I've learned so many times that sometimes it's always true. You just have to be open to new possibilities.
And the trick, too, with the internet is to make sure you get the information you're looking for. But you've got to make that decision if it's accurate or not.
Absolutely. It's also a double sword. It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Because at the same time, you need to learn how to navigate and to choose and to decide which websites are credible and which ones are not. But this is also part of our learning process. I mean, the whole humanity is growing and learning incredibly fast thanks to the internet. And growing and learning includes also the process of deciding and using your own critical thinking. Whereas before, with television and radio and newspapers, you basically sit back and receive what is given to you and what has been chosen by someone else. And I don't mean radio in your case. In your case, it's a two-way radio. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about mainstream media.
Absolutely.
Where they basically give you what they want and you have no saying in it. You know, it's a completely different story now, yes.
I remember in the beginning during my talk show days, years, years, years ago, we didn't have computers. And, you know, you would do your research for your talk show. And you'd go through, you know, Time Magazine and the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times and your local newspaper, and you'd clip these articles out and you'd try to sort them around, and you'd go into the studio, Massimo, and you know, you'd lay this stuff down. It was a mess. I still can't recollect how I was able to find anything.
Yeah.
And you've got all these articles and clippings all over the place. Nowadays, with the internet, you can do your research sitting at your desktop in a nice little packet, you know, answering any question you might have, whether it's a guest coming on or some event that's occurring. And you've got it down there and you can put together a nice packet of information and you're ready for your program. Where in the old days, I don't know how we did it.
I could never go back.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking every time we talk about the internet, I keep thinking if I remove from my head all the things that I've learned in the last 6, 7, 8 years on the internet, I'm left with nothing, a total idiot. I consider myself, before the internet, a total ignorant, if not an idiot, okay? I mean, there is so much that has been acquired and distributed at the same time in the last years that I don't think it has not been propagated in the last 2,000 years of humanity. The acceleration of the speed of the distribution and propagation of information is so incredibly high. The curve is so high that I don't even know where we're going at this point. How much faster can we go than this?
And what happens, because I do think it could happen, if we get hit by an X flare from the sun and everybody who has become so technologically advanced and dependent on the internet, on cell phones, on social networking, heck, you know, the young people can't exist without, you know, twittering or putting something on Facebook as soon as they wake up in the morning. What happens if we get hit by this X flare and all of this is gone?
That's a new lesson for humanity. Then we have to go back to the basic things that we knew once, and we will have to learn them again.
Can we do that?
Let's see. I'm sure it might happen very soon, you know, but by the time we're talking, it could be a good challenge. It's possible. I mean, I'm sure that I don't know. I'm not a 2012 prophecy person so
right.
much. I believe that deep changes are going to take place in the world, not necessarily in the next year, but maybe in the next 10, 15, 20 years necessarily, just because I see the vectors of history going in a certain direction. And they tell me that some crucial crossroads will have to be crossed at some point. There's no way around that. But I think that also humanity is learning very fast how to adapt and to cope with new problems. And so it's growing on both sides. The problem are growing on very fast on one end, but on the other end, humanity is learning to cope with them. It's a race. It's going to be a race to the last minute, and it's going to be very interesting, I believe.
Absolutely. How did you make the switch from being a still photographer in fashion, for example, into documentaries?
In full honesty, one day I got completely, totally, and irreversibly bored about taking fashion pictures. I was up on a high Sierra in Mexico for an Italian fashion magazine, and I had my team, and I was shooting this beautiful model, and it was like 6 in the morning in front of a cathedral in San Cristobal de las Casas. And I remember there was this beautiful model walking back and forth, and I was shooting and going, oh, beautiful, beautiful. And there was one small Mexican person sitting on the corner of the cathedral. And the fashion editor says, oh, get that guy out of the picture. He has got nothing to do with it. Get him out, to my assistant. And I turn, and something inside me said, you know what? We are the ones who have nothing to do here. He's at home.
That's
we
right.
Don't belong here. I just dropped my cameras. I took a plane. I came home. I never took a picture anymore in my life.
You walked out just like
absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. I think they're still there waiting for me.
with the camera. And what did you shoot? Film in those days, I guess, right?
This was film, yes. Yeah. Absolutely. We shot chromes, ectachromes. We would shoot like 15, 20 different pages per day.
I would assume as a high fashion photographer, they paid you pretty well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Don't remind me of that, because believe me,
that was the one downside of walking away, right?
Well, not really. No, I mean, I did it with a good spirit, and I'm still happy the way I am now.
All right, so you put the camera away, you jump on a plane, you leave.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you get this revelation to be a documentary film producer.
No, there was a part in between where I did fiction movies. I did regular fiction movies first.
Okay.
I wanted to make films. And I made a few in Italy. I became a little known in Italy. I won my little prizes in Venice Film Festival, or Cannes Film Festival. Then I came here to make movies. Then when I was here, 9/11 happened. And then something clicked in me. And I just, when I realized what I really thought that did happen in 9/11, and when I started to get the feeling of the size of the lie that I thought it was 9/11, the official version that we were told, I just simply felt compelled to study more and more. I open up this website, so I kind of forgot about making feature films, and I just grew into the 9/11 research. And then one thing led to another, because I found out that all the major conspiracies are actually all connected.
They are.
And this is what, you know, took me from one to another, and I just never stopped researching. And whenever I conclude the cycle of research and I feel I have enough material put together, I try to put it into a film and put it out and put all the information that I've gathered and make it available to the people who then decide what they want. I don't put opinions in my films. I only collect facts and put them together. I organize them in the best possible way. And then I leave for the audience to decide to draw their conclusions.
You know, I've always said that not everything is a conspiracy, but a lot of it is.
Well, you know, we must be. I mean, conspiracies have existed since the time of Catilina in Rome.
And, mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's part of human nature. Two people planning to commit a crime together are, by definition, conspirators. So even the official version of 9/11 is a conspiracy theory. That conspiracy theory, in particular, claims that 19 Islamic people diverted and hijacked planes and took them into the towers and into the Pentagon.
Right.
Conspiracy theory says that, no, it was an inside job, and somebody else may think that it was the aliens. That's another conspiracy theory. But when you got two or more criminals together, you have, by definition, a conspiracy.
That's right. That is absolutely. What was your very first documentary?
It was one on 9/11, and it was the only one that I've made only in Italian. I did not do the English version of it. It was called Inganno Globale, Global Deceit, it means. And it was pretty much the equivalent of Loose Change here in the United States.
Okay.
It was done for the Italian audience. And it was actually an incredible story, because what happened is that it was picked up and broadcast by nothing less than Channel 5, which is a Berlusconi channel in Italy. So a right-wing channel. It's almost like Fox here.
Okay, yeah.
But they chose that, you know, they found it interesting. They looked probably at the possible results in the audience. And they were right, and then they broadcasted it in 2006. And this started the whole chain reaction, and the big discussion in the media, in Italian media, about 9/11 started from there, and it went on for over 2 years. And now I'm not saying that every Italian, of course, is convinced it was an inside job, but at least every Italian knows that there is a major problem around the official version of 9/11.
We're going to get into a lot of that. You've also done documentaries on the true history of marijuana. I have long been a proponent that this needs to be legalized and also definitely used right now in a big way for medical purposes for people who cannot take these pharmaceutical pain pills or anything else like that. Yet, they just don't seem to do it. It's like they're making money somehow doing it, and they don't want the public to get the benefits.
Well, you'll tell me when, and we'll get into that.
Yeah. I mean, so let's get into, because you've also looked at the Robert Kennedy assassination as well, too. And I want to talk to you about that, because I'm very familiar with the case. Interviewed a number of people in the past about it. It's a strange, strange story. More bullets shot than found. I mean, it's weird. What's your take on it? What's your overall view on that?
Well, I did this documentary called The Second Dallas. First of all, in political terms, I consider the Robert Kennedy assassination only chapter two of the John Kennedy assassination.
Good point.
Robert Kennedy not only was the other half of the John Kennedy presidency in when they were alive, but just before he got killed and just when he was about to win the nomination, he had said clearly, if I become president, the first thing I will do is reopen the investigation on my brother's assassination. And, of course, you can't have that. We know very well that you cannot go in certain places. But he was willing to do that because he was probably so much hurt from so much taken by surprise in a way about what had happened in Dallas, that he was going to go all the way with that. This was very clear from the beginning. But anyway, technically, this documentary, it's interesting. This documentary was also shown in Italian television and on the anniversary, last year on the anniversary of Robert Kennedy's assassination, which is June 5th. And a lot of people in Italy did not have any idea of what's behind, actually, what the cover-up that this investigation consisted in. I mean, as you mentioned, more bullets than there were found. Actually, there were 11 bullets found, but only 8 were counted.
Yep.
So this already tells you that there's 3 extra bullets. And by the way, we have an autopsy by the famous coroner, Noguchi, who stated very clearly that the 3 shots that killed Robert Kennedy came from the back and from below, when Sirhan was standing, and everybody saw him, in front of Kennedy.
And I don't think his gun had that many bullets in it.
Well, his gun could have carried 8 bullets altogether,
8.
But there were 11 found.
But there were 11 found, yeah.
Because 3 were into Kennedy's body, 1 went lost into the ceiling, and 5 were found into the people that were actually wounded by
wounded,
it.
That's right.
And 2 were found into the door and behind Kennedy, inside the wood, and taken out from the FBI, and then, of course, this made disappear. But there's pictures of them. So already you have a problem there, 11 bullets and a gun that can only carry 8. And also we know that Sirhan, after the second shot, his hand was grabbed by the maître d' of the hotel named Wecker.
And taken down by Rosie Grier, too.
And Rosie Grier. And after the second shot, everybody agrees that he could have not hit Kennedy even if he wanted to. So my opinion is that he was probably carrying blanks. And his act was made to distract and hold the attention on him while somebody else, I'm not going to say who, so in case somebody wants to see the DVD, I don't do a spoiler for him.
Hold on for 1 second, sure. Massimo. We're going to take this break. We'll come right back with you on Coast to Coast AM. Well, for just pennies a day, you can become a Coast Insider. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com and figure out how to get into the system, and then there you are. You'll be a Coast Insider in moments. For just 23 cents a day, something like that. We'll be back in a moment with Massimo Mazzucco as we talk more about his documentary work on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with Massimo Mazzucco, film documentary filmmaker, and his website is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. One of the many things we'll be talking about tonight, of course, cancer. We'll do that next hour. Massimo, let's get into the Robert Kennedy assassination again, and then we'll get into 9/11 and your work. You've done some great work on that, too. All this, of course, as you said, it was basically Chapter 2 of the JFK assassination. I think the murder of Jimmy Hoffa might have been Chapter 3. all these people were interconnected in a very strange way, and they're all dead.
Yep. What is interesting also is something, you know, sometimes you hear people who reject conspiracy theories, the so-called debunkers.
Mm-hmm.
They will tell you one of the arguments they use all the time, for example, is if a conspiracy so large had really taken place, sooner or later somebody would talk. Why doesn't anybody talk? Well, guess what? I just did a collection of interviews of people and testimonies of people who, on their deathbed, died and confessed to having taken part of the John Kennedy assassination. One, of course, is Howard Hunt, the CIA
right.
man who was always suspected to have been part of the conspiracy in Dallas and who always denied it. But then before he died, he left a recorded confession to his son, in which not only did he admit to be part of the conspiracy in Dallas, but also named some of the people and the killers that were there, David Morales, among all.
Mm-hmm.
Another person is Chauncey Holt, the typographer who was working both for the CIA and the mob, who had prepared the Secret Service patches that they had on the grassy knoll. And he also, before he died, he confessed to be part of that, and he told all the story. Another one is Madeline Brown. She was the lover of Johnson, and she told the story of a strange party that took place in the Murchison Villa. Murchison was a big oil man in Texas on the evening before the assassination, to which took part George W. Bush, Richard Nixon, Johnson himself, and Hoover, who came down from Washington for a few hours. So people, before they die, they do tell the truth. The problem is that the mainstream media will always be ready to jump on conspiracy theorists when they come up with a conspiracy theory, but then they're never very attentive when these things happen. They're not really interested in finding out the truth. This is, I think, the real problem.
And they don't investigate.
Oh, well, that could...
Far from it.
We have one saying on our website. We say that if journalists around the world had done their job on September 12, the problem of September 11 would have been solved. I mean, you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to pose some questions. When you are told, for example, that four people who have never flown a jet in their life suddenly get a hold of these jets and do maneuvers in the sky that are said to be almost impossible, but pilots with 30 years experience, you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to raise your eyebrow. When you see buildings that go down, 400-meter buildings that go down in their footprint like the Twin Towers, and which has never happened before in history and never will probably happen again, you don't have to be a conspiracy.
That's
you
right.
just need to ask the proper questions.
Well, and then you see another building, Building 7, go down that wasn't really hit by anything.
No, absolutely. I mean, that building
not enough to fall.
I'm sorry. I'm getting into this now. 9/11 is really my thing, and as soon as you mention it, I get very agitated and hot. So I'll try to restrain myself a little bit. But Building 7 is really what they call the smoking gun, because this building, again, not only was it not hit by a plane, and it did come down in the way it did, but now NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, has actually declared it came down because of a new form of progressive collapse due to fire, which has never happened before, and it only exists in fairy tales and never will happen again. So basically, they have admitted, they made up this story because they did not know how to explain that.
And the interesting part about all this, too, is I think one of the problems that people make, whether they're conspiracy believers or not, is they don't understand that there's a bigger picture afoot here. When some conspiracy theorists, Massimo, will talk about 9/11, and they'll talk about the 19 wackos who might have been involved, and Bin Laden who might have been involved in directly in their own way, they seem to imply that it's either they were all in or all out. And I take the posture that it's very possible that there's a group of people that worked with Bin Laden and used these other people as patsies. They probably didn't even know what they were really up to, other than maybe some of the pilots that were involved. It was just the whole thing is strange. And to think that they would have done it by themselves without any intelligence at all, it boggles my mind. I just can't believe it.
Well, I would say the problem with 9/11 is this. if you really start looking at the evidence and you start looking at all the facts one by one with an open mind, it takes an average mind, I would say, between 2 and 4 minutes to realize that you're being lied to. It's as simple as that.
Right.
The problem is psychological. It's a form of denial.
Well, you don't want to believe it.
Exactly. Many people just don't want to go there because there are reasons which are part of our psychological structure, which must be respected. I mean, I respect people who have a problem going there. I mean, you know, everybody has the mind that they have. And if they have a problem going there, fine, I respect that. What I don't like is people who lie knowing that they're lying in order to protect the official version. This is the only people that I really cannot stand. And these are the people that I fight as much as I can. But if somebody is not willing to accept that, it's perfectly fine with me. I understand that. I understand it because it's a huge decision that you have to make. And the moment you accept something so large, it's really a big decision. You have to basically take your own process of information and education in your own hands. And not everybody is ready to do that.
Well, and you've always said that your job is just to inform people that the events that we were told are false, but that it's not up to you to get the answers to what happened.
Oh, absolutely. This is my position. And I represent, I must say, practically the entire truth movement in Italy, because my website is arguably the number one, if not the only one at this point, in Italy. And we strongly believe that it is not up to the citizens to explain what really happened. You know, because sometimes I get asked the question many times, well, okay, if those weren't the plane, then what happened to the planes? Or if that was the missile, what happened to the plane and what happened to the passengers? I don't know what happened to the passengers. I don't even know if those planes that hit the buildings were actually the planes that took off from Logan and from Dallas, to tell you the truth. But it's not up to us. We, as citizens, can only use our brain and our knowledge and our logic to show that what we were told is a big lie. It does not have a leg to stand on, the official story. After that, it is up to those who have lied to us to tell us what really happened. We are not the FBI. We are not investigators. We don't have the tools. And we don't have the intention to give those answers.
Didn't most of the 9/11 commission members also feel they didn't do a great job in this?
Well, you always have this, you know, this process. First you have the cover-up, and then they feel guilty about it. So the two co-chairs wrote a book together saying that, oh, we were underfunded, and we were pressured to finish, we were limited, we were stonewalled, and all this and all that. But basically they put the signature on what is the big lie of the century, which is the 9/11 Commission report, which is, to me, is the exact equivalent of the Warren Commission report. Both reports share so many things in common, and especially the fact that their purpose was to reassure the population that the official version, being Oswald in that case and the 19 Arabic Islamic hijackers in this case, were the real culprits, that there was nothing else to be worried about, that the institutions are safe and everything is fine. And they both operate in the same way, by discarding every possible piece of evidence that will lead to a different direction. They only kept and looked at the evidence that would confirm or seem to confirm the official version. This is what they did in both cases.
Let's look at what has happened since that horrible day and the events that have unfolded since, because I want you to put this in perspective for us. Assuming that we didn't get the official story, that there was something else going on here, what was the purpose? What was this leading up to? Because it's far from over.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is really important to stress. It's not over at all. And people feel that because the 10th anniversary is coming up and after this is going to be over anyway, I don't think it should be. It's extremely important not to let it die. If you look at history, the history of the United States, the United States, by constitution, they cannot go to war if they decide to. The Constitution does not allow the president to simply go to war.
Well, even though we've been doing that.
Well, you have to be attacked, or you have to be in a danger of being attacked. Now, of course, who is ever going to attack America? I mean, this is never going to happen. Nobody's going to attack America. So in history, we've always had, or the United States always has had to create or provoke incidents which then could be used for the president to go to Congress and ask for the special use of force and enter wars. This has happened since 1898, when we started the war with Spain for the control of Cuba, which was started by the sinking of the USS Maine, which was first blamed on the Spanish, but then 8 years ago it turned out that no, it was actually Americans who put a bomb on it just to have the pretext to go to war with Spain. In 1917, we helped the incident of the Lusitania, the sinking of the Lusitania happened so that President Wilson could start a escalate the crisis with the Kaiser and finally eventually enter into World War One. Then we have, of course, the infamous Pearl Harbor attack, which by now everybody knows that we actually knew it was coming. Well, we did not tell the people in Pearl Harbor because we needed that attack so that Roosevelt could go to Congress and play the little scene of the Day of Infamy.
Was he in the dark on that?
I don't think he was. No, absolutely not. I don't think. I mean, I've not studied that in that particular aspect. In that, I'm satisfied with the fact that they made it happen and they provoked the accident. They put the ships in a certain way so that the Japanese just could not resist attacking. And once I understand that, and I found documentation of actually the Admiral Kimmel was his name, the Admiral that was in Pearl Harbor, who then came to Congress and said, we had the information. I have the video, the clip, I found it, put it in my film. It says that we had the information that the Japanese were going to attack, but that information was not made available to me. He says it and he spells it out in black and white. Then, of course, we have the Gulf of Tonkin incident.
Right.
McNamara, before he died, McNamara was the
defense secretary.
The defense secretary at the time of the Gulf of Tonkin, which was 1964, which is what started our war in Vietnam. And before he died, 2 years before, he confessed in a film interview that incident never took place, in his own words. Then we have the first Gulf War, and we have learned after the first Gulf War was over that the famous incident of the Iraqi nurse who had the Kuwaiti nurse who had disgusted the world by telling the story of the Iraqi soldiers throwing the kids, pulling them from the incubators, was false.
Yeah,
it was made up.
It was a public relations.
Absolutely.
False.
Hill and Knowlton in Washington was the company that prepared her to perform that scene. So if 9/11 was really an attack from the Islamic, it would be actually the first time in history that we've been attacked and we have some kind of legitimacy in responding. But it's, of course, it's probably not the case.
And Dick Cheney also wanted a false flag with Iranians, didn't he?
Oh, he was the one behind the one in the first Gulf War to begin with. He gave Saudis the fake satellite pictures showing, allegedly, Iraqi soldiers amassing near the border with Saudi Arabia so that he could have from the Saudis the permission to establish military bases in Saudi Arabia, which then they served to attack Iraq.
Well, here's another thing that puzzles me. Muammar Gaddafi was not a Boy Scout. In his day, he was as bad as anybody. But he seemed to be under control today. Why are we in there bombing the heck out of his country, maiming and killing God knows how many people? I don't understand why. Wasn't he controlled? I mean, what was he doing? Was he working on any heinous thing?
I think this is exactly the problem.
If we were going to get him, we should have gotten him 20 years ago.
Well, I think we tried, by the way.
Well, we did
try. And those British Secret Service agents.
We didn't try hard enough.
Then. Not hard enough or not strong or not correctly enough. But anyway, I think the problem is exactly what you mentioned. He was not under control, just like Saddam. I mean, it was a give-and-take situation in both cases where both have interest in remain, quote-unquote, friends, but he was not under control. And apparently, I mean, we don't know the backstory, but apparently when things like this happen, it's because the person suddenly decides that maybe, I don't know, he wants to sell the oil to the price that he wants to and to the people that he wants.
I mean, we are bombing a country that has not attacked us.
Oh.
And there is no declaration of Congress for us to go in and do this.
Well,
and I don't understand.
I am not a Republican, but in this case, I agree with the Republicans who said that Obama did not have the right to do that. I agree with them. You know.
Yet we're in there.
Yeah.
Spending God knows how many millions a day.
Again, George, this is NATO. It's not us. So NATO is doing it.
But we are NATO. You know that. We're NATO.
It's hypocrisy. It's hypocrisy all over the place.
I see where you're coming in terms of... See, there are people who will believe the official story and say that anyone who talks outside of that is unpatriotic. And that's one of the things I want people to avoid and understand. Because people have whether it's you or somebody else, your own perspective, your own view, it doesn't mean you're unpatriotic.
Well,
it doesn't mean you hate this country by any means. You live here.
Actually, let me reverse this. Let's ask this hypothetical person this question. If you were aware of information, like I am and many of us are, that in fact it's possible that some rogue elements within our government had helped 9/11 happen or have made it happen, is it more patriotic to turn a blind eye on it or to denounce it?
Perfect. Because you've just said the most important thing that anybody has ever said, a rogue group. See, yeah. I think one of the mistakes people make when they talk about conspiracies, and I've talked to some other people who've been on my show, and they say, you know, our government did this. No, our government did not do this. You just said it.
Yeah, I could
a
not
rogue
do it.
Group.
I mean, you can't think that the entire FBI, the entire CIA, the entire Senate, they're all in it. Of course they
cannot
be. They are the first one to be duped. And all you need, and this has come out in the investigations, because all you see, when you see all the problems with the 9/11, all the people happen to be in very key positions. Joint Chief of Staff, the Vice President kept Bush away from the White House
You go to a guy who's been on your payroll since the Soviets went into Afghanistan, and his name's Osama bin Laden, and you tell him, we need this to happen. Because all these other things are going to fall in place after that. Here's the playbook. Now, we'll fund you to do this, but you go ahead and do what you have to do. And off he went, and he did it. And like Noriega and Saddam Hussein and so many others, when they become not useful to us anymore,
absolutely,
they get eliminated.
Absolutely.
And that's what happened. I think they did get him in May, bin Laden. But, you know, there are a lot of people out there, in government and otherwise, who aren't quite sure.
Well, in this particular case, I am convinced that the real bin Laden died of natural causes on December 2001. I've put together a collection of news articles, Pakistani news, and some of them translated by the BBC and reported by Fox News here, in which both Karzai and...
Musharraf, right?
Yeah, and Musharraf, exactly, thank you, declared that he actually died in 2001. But it doesn't really matter to me at this point, because it is obvious that this is a figurine. It's not an actual mean guy. And so it does, again, you know, it's not for us to explain exactly what happened and what was he really doing. All we know is that we've been lied to big time on this one. He's been used as the scarecrow, or whatever expression you use. And so it doesn't matter when he died, really. The problem is that someone else did 9/11. We don't have a single, think of this, George, we don't have a single image of any one of the 19 hijackers boarding any of the four planes that were hijacked on that day. I mean, Boston, Dulles, and Newark are international airports. They have cameras everywhere, security cameras everywhere. I'm sure if I steal a candy in Logan Airport, I get caught in 3 seconds, anywhere.
Sure.
Okay, we don't have a single image from the security cameras of any of the 19 hijackers boarding one of the four planes.
Sure. There were pictures of some of them going through security, right?
This was a great trick. What they showed us was a picture of Mohammed Atta and Alal Omari, another of the presumed hijackers, who actually board a previous plane from Portland, Maine to Boston.
I see. Hold on for a sec. We're at the top of the hour. Come back. We'll talk more about this. We'll also talk about your work, Cancer, the Forbidden Cures, on Coast to Coast AM.